It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast, presented by 101.3 The Game.
Hi, everybody. Welcome in. It is the Brady and the Bunch podcast. Today is Friday, May 3rd, which is a mild deviation from our usual schedule. We're usually on every Tuesday and Thursday. We ended up having to rearrange some things yesterday, couldn't put out the podcast, but it's worth the wait because we have a special guest here. And this podcast is for the listeners, by the listeners, and we've got a special listener here on the TikTok Jewelers guest line. It's my brother, Troy, who this is not just because he's my brother and I needed to get a guest. He is a listener. He does have a good story to tell. So Troy Farkas, Brady and the Bunch podcast, how are you?
I'm great, Brady. Thanks for having me on. And no, I'm not in the Vermont area, but I am a loyal listener of the show.
Yes, you listen to the huddle. You constantly are messaging me about it. Hey, good job here, good job there, not so good job there. You are very, very critical, and that is because you are also in the radio business. You just spent the last 20 months working at ESPN as a production assistant in ESPN radio, did a lot of work with podcasting, and we'll get into all that as well. And so you come at this from a very, very expert eye. So you're very critical at times.
Yes, I am. I just I like to keep you in line, and it's kind of funny because you were the one that pretty much got me into the business. I was looking for something to do in my freshman year of college, and that was just when you had started at radio, ESPN Radio affiliate in Albany, and I was kind of bored. I needed something to do on my spare time, and you're like, you know what? Does U Albany, the school I went to, does U Albany have a student radio station? You should get on that. I was like, huh, okay, that sounds interesting. And then I showed up to the station. You got me a foot in the door there because you knew someone who worked at the student radio station, and I went in there, and they loved me, and I got my own show, and then that one thing led to another, and I got a job at ESPN. And so now, it's funny that I'm always criticizing you because you're really the one that that got me
is that
the business.
Is that really true? Is that really how that went down?
Yeah. I mean, I had no interest in it. I mean, I, like you, had been listening to Mike and Mike just in the car with Mom, but I never really thought about going into radio as a career. I mean, I had always kind of, you know, history teacher for a while was the thing that I wanted to do. I was never dead set on it, but my freshman year of college, I was undeclared. I was on an open market looking for something to do. And just in my spare time, I picked up the radio thing. So I thought, well, you know, I like listening to it. I need something to do. Talking just behind a microphone about sports. I'm a huge sports fan. And, you know, I'm constantly watching ESPN and reading Bleacher Report. And I, you know, a huge college basketball fan. So if I can just talk about it and it's free, it's easy. Like, I don't need any crazy training. I can just show up in college and do it. And so I did it. And I wouldn't have done it had you never nudged me in that direction.
Well, it's you know, it's crazy too because I also backed into the business, and I've told this story before, so I won't go down the complete rabbit hole of it again. But I thought I was going to be at one point. I thought I was going to be a play-by-play announcer, and then I thought I was going to be a college baseball coach. And being a college baseball coach, it was happening. It was on the path towards being full time, and then it kind of got sidetracked, and I just totally backed into this business. And I mean, I really now can't imagine myself doing anything else. It's so weird how something I had no plans of doing has become the career.
I know. I had never expected this. I mean, we always thought that you were going to be a play-by-play announcer because I remember way back when in our basement, you playing the PS2 and you're playing Madden 06 as the Seahawks, as you were for your franchise every year, and you're always doing the play-by-play and the color of your games. You had this crazy high-pitched voice whenever something crazy happened, and you were always offering your own commentary, and people would think you're crazy now if they heard some of those tapes. And I would just watch you. I would just watch you play. I wouldn't play. We barely played against each other. You never wanted to play against me.
Just because I was too good. I was too good.
I would beat you.
I was too good.
You were not too good. When I was the Jacksonville Jaguars, you could not stop me.
That's because you had Fred Taylor and Maurice Jones-Drew. You had a two-headed monster. You had the two-headed monster before it was two-headed, before it was popular.
Or as MJD was known in, I think, Madden 07, whatever his rookie season was, Maurice Drew Jones.
Yes. He wasn't big enough yet coming out of UCLA to have his name actually be correct. You know, what's funny, too, is that you say, and that's true, 100%. And still, if nobody is around and the rare occasion I get to play a video game, and I only really play MLB The Show at this point, so if I get a rare opportunity to play, I will mute the game and announce it either out loud or at least in my head if there are people around. And you say people would say I'm crazy, but as we have talked to more and more play-by-play people on the huddle in over the course of the 2.5 years that Rich Arnie and I have been together, a lot of play-by-play people have very similar stories. Now, video games weren't as popular for some of them when they were growing up, but they would say, I would mute a game on TV and talk into a tape recorder. Like, it's not that weird.
I suppose it's not, but you just did it. The way you did it was in not, like, a broadcasty voice at all.
What, is it like talking to a dog or something?
Like, talking... No, not talking to a dog, like not in that, you know, hush puppy adorable voice, but the way you did it, I was like, and Corin Robinson is going to take it to the house! Seahawks are up 17-9! Like, you would never announce, you would never hear a broadcaster speak like that.
I was just getting excited.
Funny because you were practicing in terms of what you were saying, but how you were saying it was totally wrong.
Well, that's I didn't have any formal training then for Madden 06.
Neither did you in your game skills because I always beat you.
And wow.
64 as well, but we don't have to get into my dominance over you on Super Smash Brothers.
Have you heard the story? Because look, you're a listener to the show. You haven't listened every day. Have you heard the story about how I came to acquire Japanese Mario Kart for N64 recently?
Yeah, and like you had to, the bottom had to be screwed off of it, and you had, and I'm like, you are not a handy guy. So when I first had the heard that you had to do this, I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to go so poorly.
Oh, I didn't do it.
Okay, good.
So no, I had been saying, this is going back about 5 months or so. Last November, I got a real hankering I brought the N64 back from our parents' house because I had given it to you, and you had taken it to Connecticut, I think, and then had brought it back because you just weren't playing it, I think is how it went down. So I brought it back from our parents' house, and I thought, okay, here's all the games we had, and I was playing Super Smash Brothers, which you and I would play all the time, and yes, you were better at me than that, or better than me at that. And so
about time you admit it.
Yeah, well, you had the best character. Of course you're going to be the best. You play as Samus. It's impossible to beat him with this robot arm that he's got. But anyways, I thought to myself, and so Jess and I started playing Mario Party, and we got really into Mario Party. And then I was like, well, how about Mario Kart? And I started looking on Amazon. It was like $35. I was like, okay, like I have an Amazon account. Like I could buy that. And I called used video game stores. Hey, do you have it? And some guy said it was $40. And another guy said, hey, we're sold out. So I went to the station. I used the station. And I went on the show and said, hey, who has Mario Kart that's looking to get rid of it? I said, I will buy it. I will trade something. So a guy goes to me. He goes, I will trade you GoldenEye 64, which is really not a game that I grew up playing. I had it, and it's a game that was probably, well, definitely was kind of predated your interest in video games, but it was the James Bond series. It was like the first in the James Bond series for N64, and it kind of birthed all the, like, shooter games that there were. Like, the things that came after it, like Perfect Dark was an N64 game, and then, like, Call of Duty, and then all the other Bond games, you know, to now where we are now. Like, James Bond started all that. So GoldenEye is a big game in its own right, and I had it, and I don't care about it because I don't play it. So a guy goes, hey, I'll trade you Mario Kart for GoldenEye. It's like, okay, perfect. So I go to the burger bar working a Patriots game in December. I bring the game with me, and the guy never shows. So now I'm back at the drawing board. So then one of our listeners, Ty in Canada, he goes, I've got it. I'll send it to you. He sends it. It's like a month later, I'm like, this game's never coming. It ends up in Williston, North Dakota, not Williston, Vermont, and which is also... which is also a good thing considering our station is not in Williston, Vermont. So he sent it to Williston, Vermont, which is not even the right one. So finally, I call Ty in Canada out on the air. I'm like, where is this game you promised me? And I can't be that mean about it because he's trying to give it away to me for free. He goes, well, it got sent back to me. My kid got really mad I was giving it away. So I ordered you a new one from Japan. So it comes to the station from Tokyo. And he tells me that Japanese games are different than American games because the back of a Japanese video game is different than the back of an American video game. So I'm like, great, I'll never be able to play it. So I go to a used video game store. I buy a wrestling game for $3.99. And I asked the guy in the back, I go, can you change out the backs? Can you put the Mario Kart back on the wrestling video game and vice versa? And he says yes. So now I have a Japanese Mario Kart with an American backside and an American wrestling game that you can't play with a Japanese backside. So it was a lot of little tools and instruments it took for this guy to make it happen. And he said, you couldn't do this on your own. There's special Nintendo tools.
Well, it's been a long time coming. Mario Kart was always that one game that we never had, that we always brought up about us never having, and we never went and got it.
You know,
so props to you for finally getting it.
It's crazy because Mario Kart, I would go to the orthodontist, and you ended up going to the same orthodontist that I did, but they had video games in the orthodontist waiting room, and Mario Kart was one of the ones that they had. So the only exposure I would ever have to Mario Kart was our neighbor across the street and the orthodontist. And I loved the game, but I never got it. And then I found it for $40 at the used video game store down the street from our parents' house. I was like, well, that's too expensive. So I never got it until Ty from Canada stepped up with the Japanese version.
Well, I'm glad you finally got it and fulfilled our childhood dream of owning that game. For some reason, we never owned it.
Well, and you know what's even more interesting about it is that all of the text of the game is in Japanese. It's all in Japanese. But when you're on the courses, they're in English. Like the course titles, the course title says, like, okay, you are now racing at Yoshi Island, or you are racing at Luigi's Place. And the characters, they talk in English. Like if you run into each other, they go like, oh no. Like they speak in English. And the last thing that's interesting is that the characters have different names based on their Japanese version. So like In America, we know Bowser as Bowser, but in Japan, Bowser is called Koopa. So you can so you can play as Mario, Luigi, or Koopa, and I can and Toad, who is the American version, is named Canopio.
Okay.
So next time you'll have to come visit me, we'll play Mario Kart.
We're going to have to, and I'll beat you at that, too.
You will. So the reason why you're able to talk to me now is because you were on a bit of a, I don't know, a sabbatical is the best way to put it. Your 20-month contract at ESPN ended, but they're working on extending it to keep you around for much, much longer. So you're just kind of in a transition phase. So how does it feel to be unemployed, even if it's only for a few days?
It's a weird feeling. I decided to go back to our homeland, Clifton Park, New York, just to decompress, and not having something immediately to do all the time is it's weird, and I don't like it. You always hear when, I mean, I remember, for example, Colin Cowherd, who I listen to, who you listen to, both is kind of our idol in this business. I remember when he was transitioning from ESPN to Fox, he had some time off, and after like 2 weeks, it was, you know, 2 weeks, like, oh my gosh, it was amazing. Then, you know, he had like 2 or 3 months off, I think, and he was like, I have to work. Like, I have to do something. I know. So I'm enjoying it right now, just decompressing and watching TV because I never get to do that anymore, and, like, catching up. And I'm watching Jeopardy, this guy James, who was just killing it.
University of Vermont question last night.
Yes, it was. That was quite a question. I had no idea about that. If you haven't seen that clip, I strongly suggest that
at 101,
go find it.
At 101.3thegame.com, you can find it.
Yeah, there you go. So it's been nice. But I know if I were to keep up like this for a month, I'd definitely be itching to get back to Bristol.
Well, I think people know this who listen to the show. You are actually 6 years younger than me and are extremely accomplished. So I am extremely proud of everything that you've done over the last 20 months. And again, they're working on getting you at ESPN long term for the full time. So you're just in the transition stage. But the 20 months that you've spent at ESPN, what are the things that you have done that you're extremely proud of?
Yeah. So when they first offered me the job, and I was offered the job about 2 months out of college, I started there in August of 2017, and they said, Troy, we are going to offer you a job, an 18-month contract. And it's at ESPN Radio in Bristol. And so TV is obviously, you know, where we make the majority of our money. And so they have way more resources. And, they, you know, it's not necessarily the case in radio. And so they told me, Troy, you could be one of the greatest employees we've ever had. We probably won't be able to retain you. That's just the way it is, and you'll have this on your resume, and you'll get a bunch of experience, and then you'll be off on your way. And me always thinking that I'm the exception to the rule was like, okay, you know, I accepted that in the moment, but then from day one, I was like, no, they're not going to just be able to get rid of me, okay? They're going to want to keep me around. They're going to find a way, and that has happened. And, that, you know, that's what I'm proudest of, that I was able to buck the trends and, you know, prove them wrong and show them what I was able to do. And they, once those 18 months were up, they extended me for three more because they, for HR reasons, all these things take a bunch of time, you know, headcount reasons, there's some company reorgs going on, and, you know, they were able to move some resources around during these last 3 months, so 21 months I've been here, and I'm going to be coming back, so that's what I'm proudest of, honestly.
What are the things that you have gotten to work on, or the people you've gotten to work with that have been the, the coolest, the most accessible, et cetera?
Yeah, so the second biggest thing I'm proud of is from day one, I before I got into the door, Jeremy Schapp was my idol, investigative news guy. He was on TV covering all the big stories, and he's the face of E60. And when E60 was remodeled, and it got its own Sunday morning slot, 9 a.m. every Sunday, in my last semester of college. And so every Sunday morning I would sit down, start my Sunday with a story, as the brand says, and I would watch that show. And I admired so much the work that they were doing and that Jeremy Schapp was doing. And then fast forward to when I actually show up in Bristol, which I never would have expected while I was watching E60, in January 2017, I got an email about, we sent out the show note, which is basically like what a summary of the show, and Jeremy Schapp's radio show was one of the show notes sent to me. I was like, oh my God, I totally forgot. Jeremy Schapp has a radio show. Like, I got to find a way to work on that.
Called
The Sporting Life, yeah. 6 a.m. Saturday and Sunday every week on ESPN Radio. And I emailed the producer of that show and said, hey, can I come and like shadow you? I'd love to work on this show. I'd love to like see what the operation is. And he said, sure. And no one has ever really expressed an interest on working on the show like I have, because it's a different show. It's a totally different type of show. It's geared toward an older audience, and to have a young kid like me wanting to work on this kind of content that has a lot of authors and researchers on and people speaking more historically about what's going on in sports rather than what's actually going on in the present moment, the producer of the show was so taken aback by that, and I just kept showing up. I mean, I would get done with my normal shift at 3 a.m., and the producer of The Sporting Life was also the producer of Mike Golic Jr.'s show, from 4 to 6 a.m. I would wait. I would stick around until after Mike Golic Jr.'s show. So, 6, 7 a.m., I've been up for 24 hours. I just discovered caffeine at this point and its magical powers, and me and the producer would just walk through the show, and he would show me all the things that you had to do. And eventually, after months of persistence and training, I was co-producing the show, and I was booking all the guests. And it's a pre-produced show, so it involves a lot of script writing and production. It's really theatrical and how it's put together. And by the end of the 21 months, I was pretty much the producer of it, and the prior producer was just kind of serving as an advisory role. And so that was really the dream, and that was what made me stand apart, that I was willing to do that and commit all the time outside of my normal job to that. And it's got, I've been able to work with some incredible people. I was sending emails to other people inside and outside of the company that I had no business talking to.
Like who?
A production assistant. They thought I was way more important than I actually was in the grand scheme of things.
So who are the people you've gotten to talk to? Because, look, I think that we have an incredible guest list. People ask me, what are you most proud of at the Huddle? And one of the answers that's near the top is I'm really proud of our guest list. I'm happy about the kind of people we're able to bring on our show. your guest list that you're getting over at Sporting Life is incredible. Who are the people that you have been able to converse with, even if it's behind the scenes or just a couple of messages getting them on the show? Who are the people you're most proud of talking to or getting on that show?
Yeah, so the Jeremy Schapp name carries a lot of weight. And so, you know, despite the show being not on the best time slot, we are able to sneakily book a bunch of really good guests. And so, I mean, just off the top of my head, some of the guys I've talked to behind the scenes, you know, or just before I patched the person through to Jeremy, it's, you know, Vince Carter, Michaela Schifrin, the, you know, one of the best, if not the best athlete in the world right now. Coaches like Jim Calhoun, Jim Boeheim. I spoke to Grayson Allen. I'm a Duke fan, so I got to speak to Grayson Allen, which was so cool. Also, I got to speak to Tyler Hansbrough, which was not as cool. You know, then I've spoken to award-winning documentarians like Gotham Chopra. I've authors, you know, several ESPN guys like Keith Law, and there's just
Michael Phelps.
So many people I've talked to. I almost set up an interview with Kobe Bryant. I set up an interview with Michael Phelps, and got to speak to him for a bit. So, like, there's so many more people that I'm missing, but those are the first ones that come to mind.
It's the Brady and the Bunch podcast. We're talking with my brother Troy right here on the Brady and the Bunch podcast, getting some stories about his work at ESPN and some stories about me as well and our relationship. Brady and the Bunch podcast comes out every Tuesday and Thursday. This is a special Friday, but every Tuesday and Thursday will come out as close to noon as we possibly can. 1013thegame.com. You can find us on Facebook at 101.3thegame. You can find us on Twitter at 101.3thegame, or at 1013thegame, rather. You can also find us on the Apple Podcast or on Spotify or Spreaker. So however you get your podcasts, you can find us. You, as I said, you have a very critical eye for this stuff. You have listened to a number of the podcasts, too, and you have found a lot of them to be very, very insightful.
Yes. Well, because I work in podcasting now, and so I, no offense, but I have more insight into the podcasting world and the, you know, the do's and do nots of it.
Wow.
And so I'm trying to transfer on that knowledge to you. And sometimes it may come across as tough love, but I just want your podcast to be the best as it can be.
Well, Matt in Jeffersonville last week was great. I know you liked that one about the chef who taught us about how much steak sauce is too much steak sauce on a good steak, when is appropriate to order at a restaurant versus when it's going to close. So these are the kind of things that you get on the Brady and the Bunch podcast.
Exactly, and just to back up that story, if you haven't listened to the Matt from Jeffersonville, I strongly encourage it. If you're a foodie like me, and I know there's a lot of those in Burlington, it's a really good listen, especially, you know, if you watch Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives like me, big guy Fieri fan on the Food Network. You learn so much about, you know, by watching a show like that, you learn so much about the business and what goes on in the kitchen. And then Matt was able to lend a lot of insight into the business side of things. And culinary-wise, he was totally right. And I hope you take his advice that you don't douse your good steaks in steak sauce like you do, which is repugnant.
What was crazy is that you call yourself a foodie. And by the way, I hate that term. I hate that term. But you call yourself a foodie. But yet you're such a fitness freak that you don't really eat a lot of things that are that appear on those kind of shows. So how do you balance that?
Right. So I'm a wannabe foodie. I'm a foodie in my head more so than I actually do. You know, like, I know so much about food and about different types of foods and different cuisines and different cultures and different ways to prepare food, but do I actually eat it? No. I just love talking about it and love learning about it, but I am such a fitness freak, and it's to a fault, really. I mean, if I put salt on my meat or something, I feel bad. I feel like a bad person. Like, I don't wish the way I eat or look at food on anyone.
You have
like,
to...
The food that people always say, oh my God, Troy, you cook all your meals. Can you cook something for me? I'm like, you're not going to like what I cook. I mean, I'm just cooking plain chicken. I'm just cooking spinach. I don't add any sauces. I don't add any cheeses. I don't add any salts. The only thing I do is just spices, and that's it.
You need to break your rule, though, to come up here, because when Dad came to visit, I took him to this place, Beansy's Bus. Beansy's Bus was featured on Man vs. Food, kind of the reincarnated version. It used to be with Adam Richman on the Travel Channel. Now it's with this guy, Casey Webb. But he came to Burlington. There's this bus. It is a school bus that has been converted into a food truck, but it's stationary. It doesn't move, so it's a stationary food truck. Beansy's bus has a number of great cuisine just in general, but kind of their stamp, the thing that was featured on Man vs. Food, was they will actually do a bacon cheeseburger in between two fried donuts. So there's no...
No.
There's no bun, though. It's, the bun are donuts. It's delicious.
I'm sure it's delicious, but that just sounds like a heart attack for me. I would not be able to, like, if I were to eat something like that, I would feel so terribly about myself that I would not be able to enjoy it. It is a curse.
I guess I got the fun genes in the brother family.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, I'm so disciplined to a fault. Like, it helps me in my career, and it helps me, get to places I want to go. But in terms of like actually enjoying, you know, I'd love to be able to just enjoy, you know, a night out on the town, few beers and pizza, and have absolutely no conscience about it, but it's just impossible for me. I do allow myself a cheat meal once a week, and there's definitely times I want to have a second cheat meal, but I have to say no. But on that one cheat meal I do have, I do go all out. However, all out for me does not consist of something between two donuts.
Now, because you've worked at ESPN, you're actually in a unique position where and I guess I'm in a unique position as well, because generally, when you get a new girlfriend or you get a new boyfriend, like, they don't like you to, or you, like, you don't like hearing about the ex. You don't like hearing about the ex-boyfriend or girlfriend of that person. And I hear about the ex here all the time of 101.3 The Game. The guy who was in my place before me, Ryan Matlack, he is your coworker at ESPN. And again, usually that wouldn't be the case because, you know, people can come up to me, hey, it was different when Ryan was here. Hey, I liked it better when Ryan was here. Or, hey, Ryan used to do this. Generally, people don't like that. But I like Ryan a lot. We've gotten a chance to talk a number of times on the phone and in person. We've met a bunch of times. You work with Ryan. So how is Ryan, who's our old friend?
Ryan Matlack is an amazing person. He's an amazing person to work with, to talk to. He has been a mentor for me since I arrived there. Even before I got there, when I was going through the interview process, I knew that you knew Ryan, so I called up Ryan and we got to talking about the place and what it's like to work there. And ever since then, it was such a comfort when I was there, because I, you know, just moving to Connecticut for the first time, just out of college, moving somewhere else, finally on my own, and a new job and a new place, new people. And even though we had only had a phone conversation before, I just felt like such a strong connection to him. And he has been there anytime I've had a misstep, or anytime just, you know, there's been just like a corporate thing that I just don't understand, you know, because I haven't navigated that yet. He's been there to walk me through it, or tell me, okay, Detroit, this is what you should have done. Or, you know, I've been in control rooms where Ryan is the producer and there's been something going on in the control room. And Ryan has been such a steadying force, because I'm not a great board op, and it's just not something I'm good at. I'm not very good under high pressure situations, hence why I like podcasting. And Ryan was the producer, and he totally calmed me down. He could see my nerves, and he's just like, hey, Troy, just do your best, okay? If you mess up, it's okay. I won't get mad at you. I won't get bark at you. We'll just forget about it and move on. And it's because of people like him and a few other guys that are really nice, like Ryan. It's that Canadian in Ryan. We all say around the office, we joke about him being a Canadian and how nice he is. You got to tell him he's got to be more American.
He's from New Hampshire.
But he played, I think he was born in Canada.
I don't know that.
He definitely plays up the Canadian thing, unless maybe he's not a nice guy and he's living this like double life that we don't know about.
I don't know the answer to that. I do know he's a Toronto Maple Leafs fan. Bruins beat the Maple Leafs in 7. Is he done crying yet?
Oh God, you just feel so bad for him when he actually went to Boston. He went to see a game and they lost.
Yeah, that was game 7. He was there for game 7.
Yeah, he went to game 7, and like, we all just felt so bad for him, because he's been so supportive of us and our teams. When, you know, there's another guy who's a Chiefs fan, and the Chiefs obviously lost in heartbreaking fashion in the AFC, and Ryan was just so supportive of that guy, and so we were hoping to return the favor that Ryan could get a championship, but alas, it's not the case.
Yes.
But he is happy now. He always has a smile.
ESPN is a fascinating place, and even though we're not ESPN affiliated anymore, I mean, I have no problem saying that because it's the truth. I've gotten a chance to go to Bristol headquarters, I think it's five times. Once with my old station, once we went on a tour with our mother, we went together, and then I think three times doing the huddle back when we were 101.3 ESPN. And there's a lot of really cool things on the campus of ESPN. What is your favorite thing? Like, if someone said, what's the one, if I can come to Bristol and I can only see one thing on campus, what would it be?
Well, if you wanted to see one thing, I mean, you have to go over to one of the digital centers where a lot of our TV shows come out of. It's where Sports Center comes out of. It's where NFL Live comes out of. It's where E60 and Outside the Lines come out of. So that is the coolest thing, because you walk into a huge TV studio and there are hundreds upon hundreds of lights above you at all different angles. And obviously, you know, there's the desks where the anchors sit and their chairs, and you probably see their notes sprawled around a table. And it's like, you see boxes in the trash and you're like, oh my God, this was Mike Greenberg's, sandwich earlier. I can't believe I'm looking at this. And, those are the coolest things.
The Mike Greenberg bobblehead collection would be the best thing for me.
Yes, I remember going back when it was Mike and Mike, not Gold Kawingo. I would go into the Mike and Mike studio when I had some time to kill, and I would just marvel at all the bobbleheads and say, wow, Brady would love to be in my position right now.
Well, I love the fact that you have been able to get me a lot of good bobblehead gifts over the last couple of years, so it's been a lot of fun as I continue to grow my collection.
They've all been free, don't you worry.
Good. Thank you for sharing that with me. One thing I always talk about with people who are in the business is the idea that once you become in the media, you're no longer a fan. Have you found, even at a young age, even, you know, 2 years in almost, that, like, has your fandom waned as you've been doing this professionally?
It definitely has. It definitely has. I am no longer as interested, emotionally invested in everything that's going on, because, you know, a big news story just means more work for me. I definitely have lost my fandom. I'm a Cowboys fan. I'm a Duke basketball fan. I'm a Texas Rangers fan. Those are my teams. And I have been genuinely less interested in all of those teams over the past 2 years. A, because, you know, I'm working during Cowboys games. Generally, that's how it's been. So I don't get to totally invest myself. And, you know, I have to maintain a professional approach when I'm in the office watching a Cowboys game while working. So, you know, I have to keep myself composed, and you can't get as emotionally invested in it. And when you're not working during the week, you know, way back when, you know, I'd be reading Cowboys articles, you know, on Bleacher Report, you know, during the off season, what are we going to do in the draft? You know, what's the depth chart looking like? But now, like, if I'm not at work where I am reading and listening to sports news all day, when I'm not at work, I don't want to consume it at all. So that's been, you know, there were Duke games I didn't watch this year because I didn't want to be in front of another screen, because I spend my entire day in front of screens. So it's definitely waned on me for sure.
Brady and the Bunch podcast, 1013thegame.com, also available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts. You can subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, help us bump up the charts there as well. So we appreciate anyone that does that or has done that or continues to do that. Every Tuesday, Thursday, we drop these at noon. We are a little bit behind this week because we wanted to make this special interview happen as my brother had some time to do it. So you can find them also Facebook at 101.3 The Game or on Twitter at 101.3 The Game as well. I hesitate to ask this because it's putting you on the spot and it can make me look bad, but I know the audience is going to want to know, are there any stories about me that you want to share? I mean, again, I know I'm putting you on the spot, so I'm hoping you just don't have any, but people are going to want to know if you have any stories.
Well, I mean, I've got a lot of stories about you. What's the goal with the story? Do we want to embarrass you? Do we want to be proud of Brady moment? What do we want?
I'm probably more into comical or embarrassing.
One of my favorite Brady stories is, so back when you played high school basketball at our local school, Shenandoah, you kind of had a cult following around you. And I know you said, you know, I've heard on previous podcasts, you know, you're the 6'5", this long, skinny frame, and you did not want to bang around down low. So
true.
You kind of hung out on the outside.
Very true.
And just shot threes. And so you had this little cult following. You and your friends some of your closest friends, somehow, and this was genius, you guys made your own Brady Farkas fan club. It was called the Fark Arc. And every time, and like you guys had T-shirts, and there was a little section of the entire student section just called the Fark Arc. So you had this following, and I remember every time you rose up for a shot, everyone would just be going crazy. When you hit a shot, everyone would be going crazy. But the lasting image I have of the Fark Arc is when I think it was at the end of a game. Maybe it was at the end of a quarter. You had a chance to hit like a buzzer beating three, top of the key. You shot the ball backwards. The ball like slipped out of your hand, and you shot it backwards. Here you have the Fark Arc, the entire gym on their feet, ready to go crazy because maybe you were on a hot streak or something, and you shoot it backwards and let us all down.
Did you actually sit in the Fark Arc? Like, did you think it was a cool thing to be a part of, or you were like, my brother is so annoying?
I did not sit in the Fark Arc. I wanted to sit with my friends, because I was in fourth, fifth grade at this point. I wasn't ready to be sitting with a high school crowd, you know. It was nervous, all the pretty girls, and yeah, I couldn't do it.
So you're close on this story. I remember it, though. It was not me on a hot streak. It was because, man, this must have been junior year or senior year. My career arc went backwards. I started out high and ended up going down. Usually the sophomore, the sophomore barely plays on the varsity team. Junior year, they're a little better. Senior year, they're the star. Sophomore year, I started and played very well, and then steadily, I didn't get worse, but our program got better, so other guys thought it was way better than past me, so it kind of went like in this X relationship. So junior year, no, this would have been senior year. Senior year, I wasn't really playing that much, and I wasn't playing well when I did. So I get into the game finally. We run the perfect play. I get a shot off, or I get a chance for a shot, and yeah, it did slip out of my hands and go behind me. But
the time you threw a guy into a water cooler at the Armory Center.
I did not throw anybody into the water cooler. You talk about flopping in today's NBA. So this was like Vonzell LaGaulle would have been – you think LeBron is bad. Like, this was the worst. So we're playing Saratoga High School at the Washington Avenue Armory. I am a sophomore. And we're playing Saratoga for the third time that year. They've beaten us the previous two. And they're our rivals. So Vonzell LaGaulle is a Division I lacrosse player and led Section 2 in New York State in rushing that year. The idea that I, at 6'5", and at that point, like 162 pounds, could throw that guy into a water cooler is preposterous. I got teed up, though, because they always say, hey, play to the whistle. So it was a jump ball scenario. I'm holding the ball, he's holding the ball, and I finally go one last rip at it so that it makes ends up in my hands, and he just pulls this Vlade Divac stuff circa 2001 Sacramento Kings and flings himself into the water cooler, and I got teed up.
Oh, okay. Likely story.
The idea that I could throw him into the water cooler is preposterous. Me throwing the Division I lacrosse player and leading running back, come on. It's not true.
Do you ever drop the nugget that not only did you get crossed up severely by Taylor Battle, who is the all-time leading scorer in Penn State basketball history, but you also got eyed from three by Jimmer Fredette?
That is not true.
Yes, it is. Or at least you say it's true.
Well, Jimmer Fredette... Let me see.
I believe it was in a scrimmage.
We scrimmaged.
Not in a game.
We scrimmaged Jimmer Fredette's high school. And he had, in four consecutive possessions, he had three threes and a dunk, but none of them were really on me. Taylor Battle, who is the all-time leading scorer at Penn State, I guarded him for two possessions, and the first possession he pulled up for three in my face, and the second possession I said, okay, you're not doing that again. He pump-faked me out of the gym, went to the hoop for a dunk, so then I didn't guard him anymore. That is true. The other day on the huddle, they had fun with... They had fun with going through my college baseball stats and finding out senior year I had a 5.8 ERA with an opponent batting average of 3.93. But I will maintain that those stats are wrong because every time we went to a school and we were playing at their place, everything was a hit. 32 hopper in between the third baseman's legs. Oh, let's give it a hit. Oh, it led to five other runs. Oh, they're all earned now when they shouldn't be unearned or they should be unearned and not earned. So I got screwed in the stats and they were taking them as gospel.
If you want to show up the critics who are pulling up your senior year college baseball stats, you should break out our stat board from the Wiffle Ball League, the Ponderosa Possums, and show them your batting average and where you rank on the all-time home run chart, which I'm number one, by the way.
One of my favorite memories of growing up was playing wiffle ball in the backyard, really. And there's really two, and they're kind of along the same vein. One is playing wiffle ball in the backyard, and the other is playing football every Sunday for years in the backyard. But we had a wiffle ball league. I was probably, I don't even remember where exactly the idea came from for me, but we had kind of a perfectly shaped backyard. We had a very, very short porch in right field because the neighbor had a swimming pool, so it was enclosed with a fence. And they had lights on their basketball court, so we had a perfect foul pole. And yep. Then we had our basketball hoop on the left, which made a perfect foul pole on the third base side. We had a tree line between us and the neighbors on the other side for a home run fence. So we had a perfectly big and well-shaped yard. So I came to the idea that we should spray paint baselines in the grass in the backyard. So we did that. And we made a diamond, and I thought it was awesome.
And then we built a mound.
Yeah, I said, well, that was next step. I said, let's go one step further. So I went and bought dirt for a mound, and I built a mound in the backyard, and we had a little tarp for it. And we would play wiffle ball every day. Like, there was two summers where we played wiffle ball every day, 2 to 3 times a day, like, to the point where we broke the house, we dented things, we were hitting things into neighbors' yards, my arm was thrown out for a while, I just didn't care. That was the best.
Sliding into fences,
yes.
Carving up skin.
Sliding into fences, carving up skin. We had to do the lawn mowing schedule around the wiffle ball schedule. And maybe the best thing of all was opening day of the first season. We got out Dad's karaoke machine, and I sang God Bless America to usher in the first season of the Ponderosa Drive Baseball League.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, those were really good times, and I was always appreciative that, you know, like you said, I'm 6 years younger, and you let your ratty younger brother play wiffle ball and football, and, you know, because you had all the neighborhood friends. There were really no people my age.
We just needed another guy. Don't be so complimentary. We just needed another body.
Well,
just kidding.
I'm glad I was able to provide something. I really appreciated when I was little in football because we always had, like, uneven numbers. And so I would be uncovered. So I would get the one Troy pass per four downs.
Yes, and you had great hands because when no one was around you, you were right there. And you were a bit of a bulldozer. So once you got bigger and you still had the one Troy pass, you were just running people over.
Especially in snow football. I mean, you had 6 years on me, but you could not bring me down.
Playing snow football, playing football in the backyard, playing wiffle ball, and something we kind of talked about in some other podcasts with other people too. Those were really, like, the best moments. Those were really the best moments. I mean, I think about all that playing organized sports got me. And trust me, I don't have this job without organized sports leading me to meet a bunch of people. But playing in the backyard and playing with my brother and playing with the neighborhood friends, like, those are memories that I'll never forget.
Yeah, for sure. And, my fear with the generation and with the children that are growing up right now is, are they going to have that anymore? You know, are our kids going to be outside as much as we were during the summers? Or are they going to be playing Fortnite for 10 hours a day? And are they going to be on their phones? I see second graders. I work at an elementary school in the area. I see second graders and third graders on their phones playing games. You know, parents have iPads. Let their kids play on their iPads. Like, so that's what I really fear is, you know, it's just this recreational sports in the backyard or in the sandlot, like, is that going away? Because I really hope it doesn't, because that was so instrumental in getting us active, getting us out of the house, and bonding friendships and memories that you never forget.
And getting outside. Look, if you're going to stay inside, just play Japanese Mario Kart 64. That's okay. Other than that, get outside.
Exactly.
So I guess I'll ask you this before we go. Did you ever feel any, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but did you ever feel weighed down by being the younger brother? Something, not even my younger brother, just being a younger brother in general, does that come with something that's difficult?
Yeah, being your younger brother has been difficult at times all throughout my life because, you know, we all went to the same, we never went to school at the same time together, but I went to all the same schools you did. We come from a very big school district. So there's like 10 elementary schools, 3 middle schools, 2 high schools. But we ended up going to the same schools because of how the district is shaped. And so I had some of your teachers, and you're such a big personality. You love to talk. Teachers knew you, even people who weren't your own teachers knew you, and coaches knew you. And so it was always, oh, you're Brady's brother. It was never, you're Troy. It was all, you know, you read an attendance list on the first day of school. It's like, wait, are you Brady's brother? I said, yeah. And, you know, teachers, you know, called me Brady.
And you were doomed from that point forward.
What was that?
And you were doomed from that point forward because I had a reputation.
Yes, you had a reputation. And for a lot of, and sometimes with some teachers or coaches, I never outgrew that. Like, and with, you know, we had the same basketball coaches, and for the longest time, it was always like, you're Brady's brother. And then there were moments on the basketball court, like you shooting the ball, you know, behind you, where, like, I got made fun of for things like
that.
Wow. I played at the YMCA in summers, and people would make fun of me because of you, because of things that you did. And it was hard.
What a harsh! Who are these people, and what are they doing now? Let's get them on a podcast.
I'm not going to call them out, but we know who they are. And you may have confronted them once or twice.
Good. I'm glad that I did, because they can't be knocking you for me shooting the ball behind me. The worst memory of my basketball career for me was, truthfully, we had an opening season tournament my senior year when I was playing a lot before it went downhill, and I was playing very well. The first game of the tournament, I think I hit 12 points. I think it was 4 threes, and I shot really well. I was hitting everything. The next night, I had 9 points. I had 3 threes, so I was playing really well in that tournament too. Had a chance to win it at the buzzer, and I had a fall away from the corner, like behind the basket, and I hit the side of the backboard. That one hurt. That's one I never lived down.
Yep. Yeah, me either.
My brother Troy, Brady and the Bunch podcast, episode number 19, I think this was. So, Troy, it's been a lot of fun. I appreciate you coming on. I'm proud of you. I'm rooting for the next phase of your ESPN career to get going here soon so you can get back to work and stop annoying mom who you're hanging out with now at home. So I love you. I'm proud of you. And we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me on, Brady.